Walks like an animal, talks like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals. Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Alisa Johnson, co-founder of Dogs on Deployment, which provides an online network enabling military service members to connect with those in their area who are willing to care for their pets during their deployment. We'll find out about the personal experiences that led to Dogs on Deployment being launched, how it works, how widely the service is now offered, and more when we speak with Alisa in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Claire Ray from Friends of Strays, which is hoping to adopt out a slew of cats at the moment, including the always hard-to-place black cats. Before we proceed, I want to take a moment to thank everyone who supported Talking Animals and me in WMNF's recently completed winter membership drive. I did reach my goal, and it's very difficult to raise money these days for nonprofits of all kinds, so I greatly appreciate all those who donated on behalf of Talking Animals. Thank you. Right now, let's hear an animal song. This is Buck Owens with I've Got a Tiger by the Tail on Talking Animals.
I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. Well, I thought the day I met you, you were meek as a lamb, just the kind to fit my dreams and plans. Now the pace we're living takes the wind from my sails, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. Where the bright lights are found, there ain't no way to slow you down. I'm about as helpless as a leaf in a gale, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
All right. Buck Owens with I've Got a Tiger by the Tail. Peppy animal song to get us started this morning. All right, let's get into our chat with Alisa about Dogs on Deployment, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Alisa Johnson to Talking Animals. Good morning, Alisa.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to have the opportunity to speak with the Tampa area.
Yay. Well, let's jump right in by kind of, in a way, starting at the beginning. Set the scene for us, if you would, for the circumstances you and your husband, Sean, encountered that led to the creation of Dogs on Deployment. Where were you living at the time, and what animals were you living with, and sort of what happened to sort of have you guys ponder the situation that led to the creation of the school organization?
Right. Well, picture this. My husband and I, we were newly married. We're both in our early 20s. At the time, we were living in San Diego, and we had a dog, Australian Shepherd, named JD, mm-hmm. and our bird, Kiki. And I had just commissioned into the Marine Corps as a second lieutenant, and my husband, he was already into his sea tour. And he was scheduled to deploy at the same time that I had orders to go to the basic school, which is a six-month infantry-centric school in Quantico, Virginia. All Marine Corps officers are required to attend, and you're required to live in the barracks when you're there, so no pets allowed. So luckily, my father, who likes all things islandy, was happy to take our bird, but unfortunately, we didn't have any family available to take our dog, JD. Kind of a high-maintenance and very needy dog, and we just didn't have anyone that was willing to take him on, especially for 6 months. So we were looking, oh gosh, what are we going to do with JD? And we looked into professional boarding options, and it was just going to be, you know, a huge expense to us. And as a young couple, you know, we're trying to save money, but we would have done whatever we needed to in order to, you know, keep JD and our family. But we were very fortunate after kind of, you know, discussing this with our other family members and trying to figure out options. We had a very distant relative that agreed to take JD, and she even lived in Virginia, so only about an hour away from where I was going to be stationed. Me and my husband, we broke our lease on our house, packed everything in our car, and threw JD in the back seat. I had a little convertible coupe, and we're all smashed in there driving all the way from California to Virginia, which I do not recommend doing if you want anything in your marriage to succeed.
Okay, sounds dicey. Yeah, okay.
We start talking about the situation and just how fortunate we were that we had this family member that just out of nowhere volunteered to watch this dog for 6 months that she's never met. You know, a couple that she hadn't seen Sean since he was a kid and never had met me. So it was a really amazing thing to have this person just be so generous. We were inspired by it. We were inspired by our dog and our love for our dog. And so as we're driving across country, we were talking about it and thinking about other military members, and there really wasn't anything substantial that existed to help military members that also have pets. And that's where we came up with this idea. Well, let's create a foster network and a resource center for military pet owners, and let's call it Dogs on Employment, because that's pretty catchy. That's literally how we were founded. I got an HTML for Dummies book and started building this website back in June 2011, and from there launched a Facebook page, and it just took off.
So really, if I follow you, Lisa, that really was as soon as the drive to sort of start your assignment, but effectively really to bring JD to the family member that was nice enough to take JD for that time, that the idea really started to germinate. And so how long after that cross-country drive, with plenty of time to talk about it, did you actually sort of launch Dogs on Deployment?
Immediately,
yeah.
Literally,
okay.
When we got into the hotel room that night in Virginia, I started opening up, you know, my internet HTML writer and started making this very archaic website. And every single day, I was going through my military training, my husband deployed, and I was getting on the internet and every single second of my spare time, and I was just promoting this website and promoting this organization and trying to get military members, you know, notified of what we were trying to do. But most importantly, we were trying to get supporters. We needed the financial support, and we needed the people to volunteer in order to beat orders, because without them, we wouldn't have had an organization. So it was really trying to motivate the community to back us in order to provide this support network for military families.
And when you say the community, do you mean the military and the surrounding community at large, or when you first launched this, when you were first getting your sort of primitive website going, was it sort of intended, at least at that point, to sort of exist in the area in and around where you were, or how did you first aim it when you were just in the formative stages?
Right. Well, I guess I'm a Marine, and I have really big goals in mind.
Okay.
So my idea was, let's just go national immediately.
Oh.
I didn't see the benefit of just trying to focus in one area generally, because our military members are stationed all over the U.S., all over the world. I did try to, you know, hit up the main military bases that I was familiar with. So being a Navy and a Marine Corps family, we really tried to emphasize in Virginia Beach and San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really about getting those volunteers signed up. And once we had enough volunteers signed up that we were able to actually provide borders for military members, that's when the organization really started rolling. And we were also influenced by, hey, if we got this military member signed up in Oklahoma that, and we had no borders in Oklahoma, well, then I was Facebooking every rescue and every military network and contacting the news media in that city and trying to get people in that city aware just for that one animal. And, that's really how I think we started, I guess, networking everywhere throughout the country. It was influenced not only by our education of knowing where military bases were, but also, hey, we have this person here, we need to get there.
Well, I see what you mean, though, about the ambition and sort of the determination, just with that example of just Facebooking like crazy or whatever it took to get that one that one situation in Oklahoma taken care of. So so it sounds like really you started off kind of, why do anything less than national? And so really, even in the beginning, as cases kind of came up or was needed, it was national from pretty much the get-go.
Yes, that was always our goal, was to be a national organization and assist all military members and all animals. We might be called Dogs on Deployment, but we are an open network, and we have boarded everything: dogs, cats, birds, ferrets, turtles, snakes.
Wow. So. Well, that's great. That's definitely one of the things I was going to explore, because I thought that might be the case, just knowing that you guys have parrots, and I thought, all right, well, I'm going to guess there's at least a bird element, if not to other animals, despite the name. So,
dogs, two cats, and two birds.
Oh, okay, cool. I guess I didn't know about the two cats.
Spectrum.
That's great. Yeah, well, it's good that it's all in pairs, though. That's nice. But
yes, all boys and girls, too.
Oh, there you go. Cool. So then I assume, Elisa,
spayed and neutered, of course.
What's that last part? Sorry?
Spayed and neutered, of course.
Oh, of course they have, yes. Now, I assume it's then chiefly tied to the location of bases. So how many sort of bases are now involved in the Dogs on Deployment network?
Well, our goal here is obviously everyone.
Yeah.
I would say majority of bases know about us.
Okay.
We have a very big events program, and one of our thing in our events program is having a representative at every base that is just, you know, working the community in terms of where can we be involved and, you know, how can we get the word out more to the military members and the volunteers. I have not come across a base yet that we weren't able to get volunteers for.
Yeah, well, something tells me already in our brief time talking, your determination and resourcefulness probably leaves you undeterred if there's a base that needs to be cracked. It sounds like you crack it. So how many bases does that represent overall? Then how many were you talking about now?
Definitely over 100. I couldn't give you an exact number.
Okay.
But I definitely have contacted. There's a good list online of every single military base in the U.S., and I have sent personal emails to each one, especially getting into the spouse club community. We're very huge in contacting military spouse organizations. And
great.
Who's the woman behind the man usually, right?
There you go. Yeah.
We're sometimes the man behind the woman, but
yeah.
we're very big and using those resources, which are family resources. I'm a military spouse. I've been in spouse clubs, and letting the information trickle from the family network into the active duty network.
Sure. Yeah. Probably a very, very effective way to broaden the reach of Dogs on Deployment. So with that in mind, that makes me wonder, do the borders at all these various bases, do they need to be a certain proximity to the bases, or just willing to board those animals?
So that's actually a really common question. And, you know, I was looking up pets in need that we have registered near Tampa, and most of the pets that we actually get are up towards the Jacksonville area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Navy base up there. And we have had occasionally a couple that have been closer to the Tampa area. And then for borders, we have about over 100 boarders that are registered in, you know, within a 50-mile radius of Tampa.
Right.
So with that said, if you're in the Tampa area or if you're in a place where maybe there's not a military base near you, but you still want to, you know, be involved in this cause, a couple things. One is, you know, register anyway, because you never know when a military member might exhaust all his options, his or her options in her area, you know, in their area, and maybe have to branch out further. And also, you know, they might, you might email this person and just explain your family, and they might say that person is the perfect place for my animal to go to. We actually had a case where a guy that was in the continental U.S. met a person through our network that was in Alaska. And because he had a German Shepherd and she had a German Shepherd rescue, flew his dog up to Alaska to stay with a rescue group that was a part of our organization for his deployment. So it's not impossible that a pet owner would travel with their dogs in order to find the right border.
Yeah. Okay.
So
well,
that said, there's also, you know, they probably want to meet you first and maybe do a trial run, which we highly recommend. Trial run for agreeing to board a pet before, you know, a 6-month or longer deployment. So, you know, distance might be an issue for that. And with that, you know, just get involved with our events. Help us recruit people. You know, donate. Share our Facebook posts. Do whatever you can to engage us in your local community if you can't take in a pet right away.
No, that sounds like, again, you're you know, encouraging people to try anything and everything to help spread the word, and that obviously just expands the potential for those animals finding a temporary home during those deployments. Yeah. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Alisa Johnson, co-founder of Dogs on Deployment, which helps enable military service members to connect with people living in their area or not necessarily in their area who are willing to care for their dogs while they're deployed. If you'd like to ask Alisa a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, Lisa, let's get into, we sort of touched on a few things, but let's get into a little more specifically, how exactly does it work? So, both from the standpoint of military service personnel who may need help looking after their pets, and as well as, you know, the individuals that we've already touched on a little bit more, individuals and families, boarders, as you call them, who are willing to take those animals into the home. How do they get involved with dogs on deployment, and what steps are taken, and how do people start to connect?
Absolutely. Well, sir, we'll start with the perspective of a military member. Now, dogs on deployment, ideally, we would like to not exist, because that means that every military member that owns a pet has a secure place for their pet to go when they deploy. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So we kind of portray ourselves as a last resort. Your family couldn't take your dog because of some sort of emergency, or your friends are also deploying at the same time. You know, maybe you're spouse is having some sort of issue and, you know, is unable to care for your pet during, you know, your entire length of deployment. Something that is your primary plan has fallen through. Mm-hmm. And that's where Dogs on Deployment goes in. We do not promote ourselves as a first response to military members deploying, but rather a last resort, and also a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is, if you know that you're deploying and you have a dog, register on our website. It's easy. We are going through a major renovation of our website that should launch in spring. And if you'd like to donate to that, you can go to our website. But right now, you go to our website and you click, I am a military member needing help, and you register your animals on our network. Once you've gotten your account created, you now have access to our thousands of registered DoD boarders that are located across the country. And DoD boarders are the families that have agreed to take in military pets. And you start connecting. Look at their profiles for DoD boarders. You see where they're located. You know, do they have other animals? What is their living situation? Are they in a house? Are they in an apartment? And all this information is in their account profile.
Yeah.
And from there, you send them an email and you start communicating. I kind of consider it a online dating for military pet owners and volunteers.
Yeah.
It essentially starts the same way. Hey, this person looks compatible. I want to connect with this person.
Yeah.
And from there, you start a communication. We highly recommend doing a couple trial runs, meeting at a dog park, you know, having the dog stay over for a weekend, and building a relationship and an understanding of that animal before agreeing to take them in for the long term.
For sure.
If everything looks good, we provide an example boarding contract on our website, and we recommend both the pet owner and the boarder fill out the contract. And, you know, we hope for a successful deployment after that. Now, as a DoD boarder, you too go to our website, dogsondeployment.org, and click I Want to Help Military Members and Their Pets. And from there, you create a DoD boarder account, which gives you access to our registered pet owners. And it works in the same way. And again, it's a networking service. The idea is we're making connections between military members that need help and volunteers that want to help. It's very easy, and it's very straightforward, and it has seemed to work thus far.
Yeah.
But we are looking forward to our renovations that should launch this spring.
On the website, yeah. But so how, for the boarders, I mean, how do they qualify? What sort of criteria have you established for folks who are willing to look after those animals in the military member's absence?
Right. Well, the pet owner of the animal is really the one that determines who watches their pet. Dogs on Deployment doesn't have any involvement in the actual physical placement of pets to a home. So with that, it really gives the military member, you know, more opportunity to choose someone that's perfect for their house.
Right.
What we require is, you know, you need to be in a stable living condition. You have to be 18 years or older. You know, you have to live in the U.S. Right now, we do require our network to remain within the U.S. because we haven't been able to fully research what it would take for us to go international. However, someday we hope to expand international. If you live in a home that you own, great. Make sure that, you know, pets are allowed in your HOA organization, you know, especially if you're a renter. What is your pet policy? Do not sign up to be a DoD boarder if you know that you have a strict no pet policy on your house.
Sure.
Do you have breed bans in your city or your living complex? And if so, you know, unfortunately, you might not be able to take some, you know, breeds of dogs that might be banned in a certain area. And then, you know, just being honest and disclose all that information. You know, do you have other pets? Are those pets aggressive with other animals? If so, maybe taking in, you know, someone else's animal isn't a good idea for you. And just be willing to be open to what could come from a dogs on deployment boarding. We like to say all of our pets are perfect. They're not. Hopefully you get a good one.
Right.
But,
well, and it sounds like, too,
it's
that
really an experience.
Yeah, and it sounds like, too, that the key thing as you're describing this is that in the profile information that you are asking a lot of detailed questions, and then however that potential boarder answers them and the completeness and, of course, what the actual answers are in some cases would determine how many people that are then looking for boarders would say, oh, yeah, that person looks great or that family looks great. Let's contact them and see if we can further this relationship a little bit. So, Lisa, we've got one of our emailers here says, in fact, the subject heading says, Dogs on Deployment, Words from a Boarder. I'm listening to your show from Buffalo, New York. Our family is currently boarding a leopard dog named Shelby through Dogs on Deployment. We'll have her until August when her soldier dad returns from Afghanistan. The entire process has been pretty easy. We love her and feel like it is the least we can do for our deployed military. Shelby and her soldier have become part of our family, and we would never have met if it weren't for DOD. It's from Heidi, and with lots of enthusiasm and exclamation marks. So so that sounds like you know, a great sort of example of how well it can work.
Yes, and Shelby is I'm familiar with her photo and her story. And she has definitely been a placement for our network, and thank you for calling in and giving your experience.
So Lisa, this sort of brings me to both the emailer and what you were just describing about some of the border criteria. Sort of, what are the obligations and responsibilities on both sides of the equation? Starting with, I guess, an obvious question I'm sure people would have is, like, you know, expenses for food, for veterinary bills, things like that. How is that handled? Starting to answer the question about how it's handled with, for somebody takes a dog or some other animal for 6 months or thereabouts. Yeah, how does that handle for food, vet bills, et cetera?
Right. So our standpoint is a military pet owner is to remain financially responsible for their pet. And I kind of mentioned earlier that we have that adoption contract on our website. It is an example, and basically it goes over basic expenses, who's going to cover it, how much, how is it going to be covered. For an example, is the pet owner going to make a monthly allotment to the DOD border, which is something, you know, we recommend. If you know you spend $150 on your dog every month between food and grooming and toys, then, you know, set up an automatic allotment to your DOD border of $150 every month. Or are they going to pay, you know, a lump sum after each, you know, receipt of, you know, a purchase that your DOD border makes when they go to the pet store and shop for your pet. So really, it's up to the DOD border and the pet owner to decide how they want to make that financial arrangement. In an emergency situation, say I'm, you know, my pet that I'm boarding, you know, eats a bag of chocolate and I have to take them now to the, you know, emergency room and I rack up a bill. Now, that's something that you're really going to have to talk to the pet owner about because, mm-hmm. yes, we have an emergency release form on our example contract that basically is something we recommend a pet owner fills out beforehand, which gives their credit card information to a veterinarian only and says, hey, if there's some sort of emergency, I authorize my credit card to be charged up to this amount, you know, mm-hmm. if my border brings my dog in for something.
Okay.
So there's that one. You know, it's also, if you did something as the border, maybe you weren't paying attention, you know, maybe it's something that you want to kind of discuss with the pet owner in terms of who's going to be completely, you know, reliable. And maybe you help out because you left the bag of chocolates on the floor or something
okay.
like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a worst case situation. And it does kind of, you know, show you that it can be a little bit of a gray area. But what we hope is we have good people that are registering on our website and
sure.
people that are going to be honest with each other and want to help each other out. But generally speaking, the pet owner does remain financially responsible for all their pet's care.
Okay. Well, that totally makes sense. And what is the average length? You mentioned 6 months a couple of times. So I assume, is that sort of the average length of these deployment stints where folks would be looking after animals in the military member's absence?
Yes. I would say 6 to 8 months is average. However,
okay.
we do have military members that are going on short-term training for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And they just need a border for a couple of weeks, and they'd rather have their dog in a DOD border's care than, you know, maybe a boarding facility where their dog's not getting, you know, the attention that he needs or something like that. But we also have military members that need long-term boarding up to 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
And this would be because, you know, maybe they own a dog that is senior in age and maybe not healthy to fly to Japan. And this family is now going to Japan. So really everything from a weekend trip to a couple years has been posted on our website.
And so in that case, I mean, I guess in the sort of courting stage, back to your comparison with the online dating, I guess there's some discussion made about, hey, this is typically going to be 6 to 8 months, but, you know, things happen, things could change, it could be longer, it could be 2 years or more. I guess, is that all sort of discussed, if not in writing, at least in terms of the border and the military member? Because otherwise, I would think if someone said, yeah, I'd be happy to do it for 6, 8 months, I can swing that. But when it gets into 2 or 3 years, maybe their personal situations or other situations just wouldn't allow that. So is that always discussed in advance, or is that just sort of a case by case? And then maybe if that border couldn't continue for that long a stint, then maybe another border would come in and sort of look after that animal to carry out the rest of that period?
Yes. Basically, when a military member is set to deploy, so they are being forward deployed to one of our operating areas in, you know, support of the United States goals overseas.
Mm-hmm.
When they're being deployed, they have a general idea. My deployment's going to be 6 months. That could be 6 to 8 months or 6 to 9 months. There is some flexibility with deployments. And yes, that is something that needs to be discussed with the DOD border. And the DOD border needs to kind of be a little bit flexible with that.
Yeah.
If it's something that's, you know, more longer term, hey, 2 to 3 years, those are usually more set in stone in terms of, I know I'm going on this next set of orders overseas for 3 years.
It's a
3-year tour. There is flexibility. The theory is constantly changing, and
right.
military members are very familiar with the fact that sometimes we have to get up and go.
Yeah.
It's just the way of our life.
Sure.
So definitely there needs to be discussion beforehand and flexibility from both the pet owner and the DOD border. And there might be something where, you know, you have a backup DOD border before
mm-hmm.
you leave.
Yeah.
Or, yes, we've had it. We've had situations before when a deployment was extended and that pet had to go to another DOD border house. So everything is kind of very fluid in that kind of a situation, and it's something that our DOD borders need to kind of be aware of.
Yeah.
And not to say that you're going to get stuck with an animal for, you know, 10 months when you were only expecting 6 months, but it can happen.
Right. I gotcha. So let's, get yet another one of our other emails. Let's read that. We're sort of nearing the end of our time. I definitely want to get in a few more comments and some of my own questions. But this one says, we are currently boarding 2 Italian Greyhounds in Texas from the Dallas area. Great opportunity to help our military families. I have 3 mm-hmm. Italian Greyhounds, so adding 2 wasn't such a big deal. I'm happy to assist with feeding and boarding. Thanks for sharing her story and getting the word out. We did a visit where we welcomed the pet owner into our home for a visit so she could see where her babies would be housed throughout her deployment. I've gained a friend forever and would gladly board for this owner or another in the future. So that's from Kelly in Houston. So that sounds really cool. Let me ask you this, Lisa. I'm going to guess the biggest challenge of this arrangement for the military member is, of course, missing their dog or cat or bird or whatever it might be. But what are the biggest challenges facing the borders in these situations?
Right. Well, I mean, if you've ever adopted a new dog or fostered a dog or taken in, you know, some sort of new pet to your household, it can always be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I know a lot of our volunteers and stuff are already involved in the rescue community, and a lot of them are experienced fosters. So
mm-hmm.
they're, you know, you have kid proof houses. Well, people have pet proof houses
sure.
too.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like that. Now, some people have never fostered an animal. They've never even washed their friend's dog before. So that's why we recommend that trial period. Have the animal come to your house for a weekend and maybe over the course of a couple, you know, months if possible, and really get to know that dog, because there are some wonderful dogs out there that adjust very easily and can fit into any home. Unfortunately, there are also those that, you know, have separation anxiety, or maybe they urinate when they're, you know, scared or nervous, or
mm-hmm.
they chew things when they're bored.
Yeah.
These are things that are not going to necessarily break a boarding arrangement. However, if you know about them beforehand, you can take steps to prevent those unwanted behaviors.
Sure.
From
yeah, and just
occurring.
be honest up front. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
honesty is the best policy in boarding.
And most things. All right. This is Talking Animals. We're sort of in the home stretch. We're speaking with Lisa Johnson, co-founder and president of Dogs on Deployment. In our last moment or two, if you have a quick question or comment, you can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. What's it like in your experience, Lisa, when that military person comes home and the border hands over the dog or again, other animal, but let's say dog in this is it typically like those YouTube videos that we see where the pet person walks in after, you know, a deployment of some length and the dog just goes bonkers with joy? And then I guess the corollary to that is, you know, how is it for the border? I would think sort of bittersweet in some sense.
Absolutely. And I hope if one of our listeners has already been through this situation, they send you an email or call in to really get that personal story. But
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of our fans have already seen our reunion that we did on the Queen Latifah show. And we have had another couple local media coverages
yeah.
on reunions. And it is just an emotional experience. I have been away from my dogs for, you know, 6 months, and when I come home and they are just all over you and
yeah.
so excited to see you, it's an amazing feeling to watch that. I mean, especially dogs, unconditional love is
sure.
You can't get that kind of emotional feedback, I think, from any other animal. And yes, I'm sure for the border, it's got to be very bittersweet. I have never fostered a dog through Dogs in Employment, but I have fostered many dogs before rescue organizations, and it is very bittersweet. You love this animal. You've come to care for this animal and be with this animal every day. But what's different between Dogs in Employment and fostering for a rescue is when you foster for a rescue, that animal doesn't already have a home.
Yeah.
So you become more attached and, I guess, a little bit more, possessive of it, perhaps. Mm. But with a border or, a pet from our website, that already has a home.
Yeah.
So, in the back of your mind, you know that this reunion is always going to be coming. So I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah. No, that's probably a good point. It probably does alter the thing. Although, again, if some of those longer stints that we talked about, that I think that would still be tricky if you got into 2+ years or more looking after that animal. Boy, that day where you have to sort mm-hmm. of return them would be really a tough one. But Elisa, I think we have just kind of reached the end of our time here. But gosh, it's really been great speaking. We've been speaking with Elisa Johnson, co-founder of Dogs on Deployment. The website is dogsondeployment.org. And even though there's a big website revamp coming, the website is, active and current now. And there's, you can go there if you've heard this and say, hey, maybe I'd like to become a boarder and help out in that way, or just find out more about the organization. So, Elisa, again, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talk Animals and helping all these military families and their animals with this cool idea.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with your fans. And I look forward to working with all you listeners out there on our website and our Facebook and whatnot.
That's awesome. Thanks again, Elisa. Take care now.
Okay. Have Bye-bye. A good one.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. In just a few minutes, we'll speak with Claire Ray from Friends of Strays, which is in the midst of trying to find homes for a slew of cats, including black cats. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Nick DiPaolo with part of a piece called Animal Activists. On today's Comedy Corner, on Talking Animals.
I'm sick of activists. Everybody's a goddamn activist in Los Angeles. Everybody's like an animal activist. I love animals, too. But, if I see one more person walking a dog with a coat on it, I'm going to stab him. I swear to God. That's the first sign of mental illness. You start dressing up your pets, okay? Take the snorkel jacket off the chihuahua. The dog was born with a coat. He doesn't need another one. It's like giving an alligator false teeth. Leave him alone. On the lawn, he licks his own balls. Let's buy him a tweed jacket. We don't even have kennels now. We have doggy hotels in this country. Did you see this? We got people sleeping on the streets in this country, yet somewhere there's a poodle pissed off because a maid didn't leave a liver snap on his pillow last night. I got a lady that lives next to me that talks to her pets like she thinks they're human. She's yelling at her dog last week. She's going, "Did you hear what I said? Did you hear what I said?" I go, "I think his hearing's perfect. It's the English language that's throwing him off a tad. Maybe he can't hear you because he's wearing earmuffs and a hat."
All right. That was Nick DiPaolo with part of a piece called Animal Activists, taken from his album Born This Way. All right, now, to fill us in briefly on Friends of Strays, let's welcome Claire Ray to Talking Animals. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Duncan. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. So let's first just do a quick overview of Friends of Strays. What is it and how long has it been around?
We've been around for over 30 years, and we're a no-kill shelter for strays. Mostly cats. We do have a few dogs. Right now we have over 300 cats between the shelter and our foster home.
Wow, that's a lot of cats.
A lot of cats.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about the somewhat against the backdrop of sort of the seasonal nature of more or less cats being over there at Friends of Strays and what you're currently trying to do to find a home for as many of those cats as you can.
Well, right now we're really promoting our black cats. We have probably 125 thereabouts cats up for adoption, and of those, close to half of them are black, and they don't get adopted due to superstition, and I think because they're just not as showy as other breeds can be, but if you really look at them, you can tell they're just gorgeous little panthers just waiting to go home with you. So we're promoting those. I did some research and found that in certain parts of the world, cats are considered lucky in love. So in honor of Valentine's Month, we are giving away a long-stem red rose with every black cat that gets adopted.
Wow, well, that sounds cool. And I'm just going to put my own personal plug in for black cats. We have two black cats at the moment at our house, and the probably the closest animal relationship I ever had was with a black cat, a sort of prickly genius named Otis. So black cats are awesome, and yeah, they do sort of get short shrift, but they're gorgeous and amazing. And so let's hope that some people listening today say, you know what, yeah, it's time for us to add a black cat to our family.
Well, I sure hope they do. And I do want to thank Green Bench Flowers in downtown St. Pete for donating the flowers to
us. So, yeah, you not only get a black cat or another cat if you somehow don't want to get a black cat, and you get a rose out of the deal. So, so we can't really get into the fees, but in addition to the flower that they get, I guess it's probably extremely reasonable just because, again, sounds like there's a lot of cats there and a lot of cats that you're trying to place into homes.
It's extremely reasonable, especially when you consider they're all spayed and neutered, have all their vaccines and are microchipped.
And are they an array of ages?
We have a variety from 2 months old up.
Okay, so pretty much any cat that you'd like. Again, hopefully you'll go for at least one black one, but any, it sounds like any cat, any color, any age, and again, already spayed, neutered, chipped, and ready to go.
Absolutely.
Wow. So how can you can't really not do it then, I think is what we're saying here, Claire.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Cool. Well, let's let folks know the website for Friends of Strays.
Yes, that is www.friendsofstrays.com.
Okay.
And you can also like us on Facebook.
Beautiful. And also, if people want to get their information to follow up or look further into some cat possibilities, the phone number, I guess, would be 727-522-6566.
That's right.
Cool. All right. Well, let's hope some people step up and give some of those cats a home, and be really a great way to sort of close out, like you say, the Valentine's Day month. And again, you get a rose thrown in for good measure. So cool, Claire. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for your good work over there at Friends of Strays.
Well, thanks for all you do. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households by author Ellen Jaffe Jones, signed by Ellen, no less. So we'll get to that in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements, starting with sort of a huge story and a local one sort of at the same time. This ran a few days ago, Tampa Bay Times, but all about the greyhounds, and the headline even kind of says it all in a sense. Inside Florida's racing industry, where 74 greyhounds died on track property in 7 months last year. It's a really, it's a disturbing piece, but it's a really important piece to read if you haven't read it already. It's by Mary Ellen Klass, and I think it ran originally on Saturday, the 15th. Yeah, it's... If you had any doubts about what goes on in the dog racing world, how tough a life it is for the dogs, even the ones that survive, but boy, a lot of them, unfortunately, are going to be dying in a very short period of time, please check out this piece. Also, locally, at least Florida-wide, so far I haven't seen the exact specifics, but I meant to get to this last week, but on our Fun Drive show, I just didn't have a chance to get to some of the announcements of events and news items that I was hoping to, so... I just want to at least mention that an undercover investigation by Animal Defenders International has filmed sort of a pretty awful treatment of monkeys at Biodia, a Mauritian monkey factory farm that supplies U.S. laboratories and whose monkeys could soon be behind bars in a new breeding farm in Florida. So far, at least, maybe they've since revealed a few more details about where in Florida, but we will track that and hopefully have more information about that in coming editions of Talking Animals. And on the other side of the state, just kind of notable, just because talk about a seal that had an interesting sense of direction. This is a dateline from Riviera Beach, a harbor seal that defied species swimming patterns and headed south, far south, has been scooped from Singer Island's sunning perch and is headed for SeaWorld. Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission officers and biologists were dispatched Sunday morning to watch over the seal spotted at the Singer Island jetty. At the time, plans called for just keeping an eye on the wayward mammal, which would not normally venture south of the Carolinas. SeaWorld was expected to arrive the other day and capture the seal and take it to Orlando, where it could be checked out. After, I think, circling the air with little luck for most of that day, the biologist from the organization there got close enough to snare the the seal, and I guess they thought this would be the best place to sort of examine and hopefully rehabilitate the chili. So they're best known for frequenting chili waters off of California. So, again, unusual. I guess there have been a few more in recent years in the North Atlantic, but this was unusual in a few ways. So, and let's see, some events coming up locally here. Include Second Chance Boxer Rescue is presenting the first annual Doggy Carnival and Fair this Saturday, February 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 6106 West Knights Griffin Road in Plant City, just 10 minutes from Tampa. And there'll be music and food and vendors and rescues and all kinds of cool things, contests and more. So you can go to saveaboxer.org for information, directions, etc. Also coming up this weekend, in this case this Sunday, February 23rd, it's the Florida Voices for Animals Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction. It's their annual fundraiser. The speaker will be this year will be George Eisman, author and animal activist and one of the nation's leading educators on vegetarian nutrition, but there'll also be a silent auction, vegan dinner, awards presentation, and more. And that's taking place at Trang Viet Cuisine again this Sunday, February 23rd from 4:30 to 8 p.m. To find out more about that, you can go to floridavoicesforanimals.org. Lastly, although they may be in the tail end of this, but another cool local thing going on is through the Humane Society of Tampa, under the auspices of PetSmart Charities, has this Beat the Heat special going on. So you can get your cat spayed in advance of her heat cycle and getting fewer unwanted litters going on in the area. So you will need to call 813-870-3304 for more information, and you definitely need to make an appointment either at that phone number, or you can go to humanesocietytampa.org to find out more. All right, we have time now to get into Name That Animal Tune, where the show was a giveaway, by the way. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, and there'll be a prize, a copy of Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households, signed by author Ellen Jaffe Jones. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, we'll take that off the air if you happen to know. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, February 26th, with another edition. I hope you'll join me then. I also hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives, podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link there to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally. Follow us on Twitter, etc. Most of that can be found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Alternative Radio is next on WMNF. We're closing out today's show with an instrumental animal song and a cover of Tom Waits. Nice combo. This is Booker T with his version of Get Behind the Mule on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks again for all those who supported Talking Animals in our winter membership drive. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.